Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody out there, all of you faithful Android users, also known as the Android Faithful. We are Android Faithful, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the world of Android. I know I'm faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
Hi, I'm muted. I'm Winwood. I wasn't expecting me to come up. I was like, sorry.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Michelle Rahman.
It's good to see you all. Good to be here for another episode of Android Faithful on a very consequential week. This is a big week.
Big week. A lot of stuff going on. Should we get right into the big news?
Yes.
Jason, are you ready to... Well, I'm really in the position to show everyone.
Yes.
We've been teasing it. Those of you watching the live stream right now or watching the video can kind of see it, but... Very excited to announce that Android Faithful has got merch.
Merch! Beep, 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 beep.
I am currently wearing the first Android Faithful t-shirt to be available to the general public. It is called the Android Faithful Frequency, and it's designed by none other than Win, thanks to the great work on our promo assets. And you can get this all over at Threadless. Our good buddies over at Threadless offer great service. You can get it at androidfaithful.threadless.com. And also they have a spring sale going on where everything's like half off. You can get a t-shirt for $13, which is fantastic. But, for our audio listeners, it is our logo on a black shirt, although you can change the t-shirt color. But it's more of the darker tones because the design doesn't work well on lighter tone shirts. But it's the outline of our logo with a little waveform, and the Android Faithful logo in white. And you can get it on a whole bunch of different styles. They've got regular t-shirts, tri-blend. You can get it like a softball t-shirt. You can get it on a jacket. You can get it on a skateboard.
A jacket?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I'm going to order everything.
Yeah.
Literally everything.
So lots of options. It is the first of many, many, many more merch items to come from Android Faithful. So head over to androidfaithful.threadless.com. Get yours today. The sale ends on March 25th. So you want to act fast. You only got a few more days for it. But yeah, we're super excited to finally be getting this rolling. So
super excited. Yep. Yeah, we've got more ideas kind of around this coming up. This is kind of like the first design. So
yeah,
stay tuned.
We had to go with the logo, right? We want to make it a little different from the patron t-shirt. So if you're a patron and you're getting a t-shirt, you're getting a different style shirt. And what I like about this shirt is that it's our logo, but Win did an amazing job for our social media promo assets. If you follow us on Instagram, you've probably seen. And I was looking at one day, I'm like, that's a t-shirt too. And so it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So in essence, there's Jason in the t-shirt as well, because that is the waveform from the theme song. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, really? That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a visual representation of our theme song on a t-shirt.
So. Now we just need a reader. So, someone needs to create an app that can read the visual representation of that waveform. So when they walk up to you on the street and you're wearing this shirt, they can hold up the app and it'll play that part of the
sound. That's a great idea.
Oh,
that I should, all future shirts have a QR code to go to the website. That's a great idea, actually.
Dang.
All right, we're going to do that.
Okay.
I wish I thought about that.
It's okay. This is our first shirt ever.
Yes.
Second shirt ever, but first available to everyone.
So we're super excited for everybody who's ordered a shirt already. It kind of soft launched earlier today. We let the patrons know it was coming. But now the whole audience, we want to let you know, go to androidfaithful.threadless.com. And we're going to put a link up on our website so you can get to it easily. And yeah, thanks everybody in advance for buying one. All the money goes to support the show, and we thank you. So
indeed,
I'm jealous, I'm
going to have one of everything. I'm going to have an Android Faithful section of my wardrobe now. I'm just sad I don't have one in time for Japan. But as Ron said earlier in one of our chats, I was like, well, you just got to go back again so I can
No big deal.
No big deal.
Just return.
Just return.
With all, then you'll have a number of different designs.
And, true.
Well, and I know that this t-shirt is already helping you, Michelle, with your wardrobe plans for this coming May because you got a big event to go to, right?
I mean, I'm not the only one, hopefully. Hopefully we'll all be there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in case you all didn't know, that it's that time of year where people solve puzzles.
Oh, no.
15 levels of puzzles. Not that, if only. If it was, this is the event where we don't get free gifts anymore, but we do get to find out what is going on in the world of Android and in the world of Google in general. Yes, Google I.O. was announced. And if you really don't want, if you want to solve the puzzle and find out for yourself, then mute for the next little bit. But if you don't really care and don't like puzzles, it's going to be May 14th. At least the main keynote for Google I/O 2024 will be May 14th. There are going to be, you know, live keynotes and on-demand sessions for us dev folks, as have been previous years. I will say, though, that I got an invite as a dev, and even though the website says just the 14th, there is something for devs on the 15th. I only mentioned that just because I wonder, you know, we keep talking about, you know, Google I/O being quite different than it was, you know, in the pre-pandy days.
Yeah.
That sound quite right, but you know what I mean.
I like that, actually. The pre-pandy days.
Yes, I don't know that I've heard it before.
This is just for us. Anyway, I guess at least from our dev side, we wonder, you know, what is going to be on the 15th. We don't know. But obviously the things that, you know, most of us, and especially probably the Android faithful will care about will be on the 14th. And, I'll spoil it. I'm already going. Anyone else thinking about going?
I think we're all thinking about it.
We'll see.
So with the 14th being the keynote and the major kind of press attendance and stuff like that, and the 15th probably being focused more on devs, I'm definitely blocking out the dates if I have to go west, that's for sure. But I know we are all awaiting our official invitations from our good friends at Google, right? So cross our fingers.
We got a good feeling about it, though.
Yeah, I'm hopeful. We were there last year. They can't not, you know, like now we started a thing where we all four of us were together in those boxes at the shoreline. It would be sad if we didn't repeat that this year. So I'm hopeful.
A tiny bit of inside baseball. So last year, even on the dev side, the invitations were extremely restrictive. Like, I don't even know how I got in last year. A lot of people didn't. And I will note that friends of mine who don't even do Android anymore, don't tell anybody, got invitations. So that's not to say that they're just like giving out invitations like free candy, but I think they're opening it back up to people that they know have been in the past. Okay. I can only hope that means something for non-devs.
So if that's true, then that means more people. And when I'm thinking of last year's event,
there was a lot of seats open.
Oh,
were there a lot of seats open?
It was just us in that forward box, right? Yeah.
The front area was full. The pit was full.
The pit was full, yeah.
And then we were in the press boxes, and then all those seats behind us, there were open seats all the way up to the grass, and the grass was open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely the grass was open.
Yeah.
Okay, totally. All right. So they're opening it up. Do we think, now this is another year of the one-day event. Maybe Google's already said this, and I'm forgetting it. This is just the way it is now. This is I/O. Yeah. I/O is a day, right?
Well,
at this point, it seems like.
Or it's 2 days if you're a developer.
The keynote has always been 1 day.
Right.
But like they've always had more days for like developer secondary keynotes. And that's seemingly what they're going to be bringing back. Although like they haven't announced what they're actually going to be talking about on the second day.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I missed that part because last year it was just 1 day still.
Last year was only 1 day. There was no
playing the game, Jason.
Yeah, this is slightly dev inside baseball. Yeah. I can tell you that I was told also the 15th in my invitation, but yeah, who knows? And I don't even know if they're going to have sessions like they used to. They used to have like almost classroom sessions where you'd go from like session to session. I don't even know if that's going to be the case. Maybe, but sometimes they also do adjacent events where they have just a bunch of us in a room and they ask us our opinions on things. So I don't know yet.
It could be more focused. It could be more breakout.
Which I think might be. I don't know. I'm just speculating now. No one's told me anything. And
Michelle, have you heard any rumblings about any details of it or anything
on the second day? No, I don't know anything either.
Or on the first day, you're plugged in. What's the whisper network say?
I mean, we know they're going to talk about Android 15, of course, but why wait until I.O.?
Just put up the slide deck that is the keynote, Michelle. We know you have it, right?
Wait, he's going to tweet it. That's why. Or he's going to put it on Mastodon or something like that. Well, so, when you have something to say? Or?
Oh, no, please go ahead.
Well, one other question that we don't know might not be happening or happening or not. Like we said, we're hoping to go. We're hopeful to go. We're thinking about if we do go, maybe we throw a party. Maybe.
Yeah.
Thought since all four of us are going to be together and so many of our friends are going to be there and maybe some of you listening are going to be there. We're thinking about possibly throwing an event the night of May 14th there in Mountain View. But we'd love to know if you want to come. So put up a little form. It's at bit.ly/AF Google I/O, all one word. That's bit.ly/AF Google I/O. And just let us know if we threw an event, if you'd be interested in coming. And then if you do let us know if you're coming or not, it'd be great to get your email so we can let you know details if it happens or not. We're putting out feelers. We're thinking about it. Again, we're not like Jason, Michelle, myself haven't been invited yet. We're not guaranteed for sure going. We'd really like to. But we're wondering if we do, it'd be cool to all get together and maybe do a live podcast. Also, Jason, what do you think, Wynn?
That would be, I think, yes, absolutely. It's on. Yeah. Look, IO's on a Tuesday. It's like Google is basically, they baiting haven't, of course, invited us yet, but they're baiting us. They're basically saying, hey, would you please come out here and do the show from here if we decide to invite you?
So the big question though is that if we did this, because it's going to cost money and there's going to be, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. We're going to have to line up how we do a live show and all that fun stuff. So we just want to get a sense if anybody in the Mountain View area or the San Francisco Bay Area would come to this on the night of May 14th. You don't have to go to IO. It would be totally free. We don't, we want to make it, so really, if we're going to get a spot to do this, we want to make sure people show up.
That's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you're saying yes, say, give us your yes that where there's some intention behind that, where it's like, if you do that, I'm there.
Yeah.
That's what we want to know. If people are interested, would you actually come to something like this?
Because to be honest, I don't want to do all the work if nobody shows up. So
totally.
Yeah, we don't want to go through the hassle of getting people to help us and then no one shows up and then we're like,
That'd be a little embarrassing.
Right. But it'd be cool to have a bar there, get a drink. Yeah. We could do a live show, maybe have some surprise guests. We could, it'd be fun. It'd be a fun thing.
It would be fun.
So we will see. So let us know. Again, that's bit.ly/AF Google I/O. Let us know if you would be interested in that. And
does the capitalization scheme matter with Bit.ly?
Does what?
Does the capitalization of AFG
I don't think so.
I/O?
I hope not. I will see. I'm trying to Bit.ly
matter? I don't know. Anyways, if you're curious, check the video version or I'll put it in the show notes. So you can click the link. So okay, so then for audio listeners, just so you know, bit.ly/AFGOOGLE so lowercase and then capital I capital O,
and we're going to put the link in the show notes on androidfaithful.com and in the feed. Yes. If you're listening to this on the podcast and on YouTube, we will make sure it's all linkable that you can get to it. About that when I set it up.
I would have expected that. I would not have expected that to be a thing, man.
Anyway,
so
just let us know if you want to come. So no worries if you can't, or no worries if you're not in the area. But this is putting out feelers. So
it'd be so much fun. All right. Wow. And it's already IO time. Now we know that IO news is going to be fast and furious for the next couple of months.
That's for sure.
Probably hearing a lot about Android 15. I don't know why we would hear about Android 15. Oh, wait, we will from you, Michelle, right now.
Exactly. Why wait for Google IO when you can talk about Android 15 right now? And one of the features that I talked about last week, I wrote about for Android Police, is this feature that Google is working on called Powered Off Finding. And this is a feature that will allow you to find select Pixel devices even when they're powered off. So last week I talked about the Find My Device network and basically why it's being held back because of Apple. And this feature that I'm talking about, when it launches, it will rely on the Find My Device network. Because basically how the Find My Device network works is that Android devices will be broadcasting essentially Bluetooth beacons to nearby devices that are also part of the Find My Device network. And if those devices are in range of the broadcasting device, they can pick up that beacon, encrypt the location of the Android device it's broadcasting, and then upload it to Google's server so that only the owner of the broadcasting device or the people they've shared the encryption key with can decrypt the location. However, in order for a device to actually broadcast the beacon to nearby devices, it needs to be powered on, or rather its Bluetooth controller needs to be powered on and sending those beacons. That's impossible on most Android devices, but on select devices that have the necessary hardware to be able to power the Bluetooth beacon and continue broadcasting, even though the rest of the components and the OS are powered off, they'll be able to do this using the powered off finding feature. So what I've found is that Google's working on implementing support for this new system API in Android 15 that allows the Google Play Services app to send pre-computed Bluetooth beacons to the Bluetooth controller so that it can store those keys in the memory of the Bluetooth controller so that when the device is powered off, it can continue broadcasting those beacons to nearby devices, even if everything else is shut down. And this is a feature that I have found should be supported on the Pixel 8 and the Pixel 8 Pro, which means it'll likely also be supported on the upcoming Pixel 8a, Pixel 9 series, etc. But it's seemingly right now not supported on the Pixel Fold or older Pixel devices like the Pixel 7 series. And the reason is likely because, like I said, this is a hardware. This relies on hardware support. You have to have a lane that powers the Bluetooth controller when the rest of the components are down. It's not something you can just patch via software to enable. There has to be something that's done in the factory to enable. And it looks like that has been supported at launch with the Pixel 8 series. All we're waiting on is the launch of the Find My Device network and then the upgrade to Android 15 to enable this powered off finding feature.
That's cool. I think that makes a feature like this incredibly, like, far more useful if it doesn't need to be on in order to be tracked. That's a really fantastic
feature. I mean, that takes away the friction, right? Like, yeah, that right. This is almost like how it should work regardless, yeah, right? Yeah. So, yeah. That's good. And hey, Michal, it's Find My Device Network.
Yeah, it's your
bingo.
Yeah. It's your bingo card.
Oh, man, we should make a t-shirt of an Android Faithful bingo card.
Put it in the dock,
putting
man.
In the ideas. Okay, that's a good idea.
AI is just real big in the middle. Oh, wait, no, you wouldn't want to do that. It's like a freebie in it. Never mind. We can talk about this later. Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Very good idea.
Love it. Cool. Okay, so we're going to see that in Android 15, potentially.
Hopefully. Because yeah, we still have no idea when the Find My Device network will actually launch.
Right.
And this feature is not going to launch if there's no Find My Device network.
For sure. What else we got?
One feature that I do expect will be launching in Android 15 is built-in support for app archiving. So if you're not familiar, Google Play has had an app archiving feature since last year. This allows you to automatically archive apps when you're low on space to free up some storage space that are taken up by those apps. So basically how it works is when developers submit apps in the Android app bundle format, Google's backend tool takes that bundle and it generates this really stripped down version of an app called an archived APK. And then when you go to archive an app inside Google Play, Google Play pushes this archived version of the app that's like significantly smaller, and it overwrites the original base installation, but it doesn't clear any of your user data. So that means you can archive the app, and then when you restore it, it downloads the original app installation files, and then you're back to where you were. So as an example, in the Android Authority article that I did in the demo with the Uber app, before I archived it, it took up over 300 megabytes of data. After I archived it took up about like 14 megabytes, so like an over 90% size decrease. But after I restored it from the archive state, I was able to open back up into the Uber app without having to sign in again. So all my account was already there. I didn't have to log in, go through all that hassle. So this could save you some time if you need to clear up some space from some heavy hitter apps, but then quickly reclaim it. And the benefit of this being built into the Android OS and Android 15 is that you can go to the settings app and you can manually archive apps that you want. Previously, this is all only handled automatically by the Google Play Store. So you were basically limited to whatever it decided to archive for you. But this is being done into the OS, so you can choose when to do it. And also this means that other third-party app stores could add their own implementation of app archiving, and that would be integrated with the OS.
Whenever app archiving comes up, I just can't think about how revolutionary it was when Nextbit did it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yep. the fact that it's taken how many years now to get to the point, to get the functionality to the point where Nextbit had it, like, out of the box all those years ago.
Yeah.
I think one key difference is that the Nextbit solution, they were literally uploading your entire app plus data
to their cloud.
Yeah. Right? In this situation, your data never leaves your device.
Sure. Yeah. No. This is the way it should be. Yeah. This is awesome. This is great. But conceptually, I mean, like, the giving you that
and
level
just seeing
of control,
the process, seeing the little icon kind of fade out and then come back and everything. Yeah. It totally reminds me of that too. And I can't help that because that's how it was implanted. You know.
Yeah. So. Very cool.
But yeah.
All right.
Nice.
All right. Well, before we get to the next story, I'm going to revisit the Google I/O thing, by the way. While just Michelle was chatting, I quickly made a bit.ly with lowercase letters. So bit.ly/AF Google I/O, all lowercase. That works.
It works.
If you capitalize the AF and the G in the I/O, that works too. So we're covered either way.
But why?
I also want to remind, and mention it again, you can come to this if you're, no matter what, this will be open to anybody. So if you're going to I/O, you can come. If you're just a fan and you're a listener and you're not going to I/O, you can still come. So this could be open to anybody. So you don't need to be going to I/O to come to this event thing. So
and
I want to make
and
that
if you
clear.
Have no like possibility of even going to I/O or being in the area, don't worry about the form. Like,
right,
we don't need to know that you're across the country and like, oh, well, I won't be able to make it. Like,
exactly.
We're really running this to know, like, of the people who could possibly make this, who would.
Yeah,
and that's what it's all
exactly.
about.
So, anyways. Okay. Thank you for that. All right, so back to the news. This is actually something that's been developing over the past couple of weeks. I've been tracking it. Michelle, I know you've been tracking. I saw you tweeting about it. Android, one of the great things about Android and gaming and stuff like that was the fact that there have been Nintendo emulators available literally for years, right, Jason?
All
like
kinds,
how long
kinds.
Ago was the first time you saw a Nintendo emulator on Android?
That's one of the things that I loved about Android early on was the fact that, oh, wait a minute, that emulation thing that I could do on my PC, I can now do that on my smartphone, and I can take Galaga with me or whatever
Galaga
game
wasn't
that I spent
on Nintendo,
10 seconds
yeah,
playing,
but
you know?
But anyway, but so Nintendo, I don't know if you've noticed, is doing very well these days. They just announced another Super Mario Brothers movie coming in 2026.
Oh my goodness.
Things are going very well in the world of Nintendo. And so, as often happens, Nintendo is actually increasing their efforts to remove third-party emulators of their systems from places like Google Play. They targeted Tropic Haze LLC, which is the developer of a Switch emulator, Nintendo Switch emulator called Yuzu, Y-U-Z-U, which forced a settlement for $2.4 million. So Tropic Haze had to pay Nintendo $2.4 million. Mm-hmm. And now Nintendo is focusing on other emulators. Drastic, a Nintendo DS emulator, they changed their app from being $4.99 to free with a note that it will soon be removed from the Play Store altogether. Skyline was a Nintendo emulator that was removed from the Play Store after Nintendo went after it. And Citra, a 3DS emulator, was also discontinued. So Nintendo emulators are being targeted and might not have much life left to them. And Michelle, actually, I just remembered, I saw a tweet that you did that folks were using Yuzu like as a development platform, right? Weren't they like Yuzu was like...
One quick correction.
A testing
Skyline,
platform, right?
Skyline was discontinued before any of this stuff happened, but the developers got out before this could happen to them. Mm-hmm. One thing, it's kind of like an unspoken rule among like tech reviewers. Like, if you want to push an Android phone to its absolute limits, there's like one or two games on the Google Play Store that might do it, like Genshin Impact or Honkai Star Rail. But if you want to really push the limits of the CPU and the GPU, you want to emulate a game using like Citra for 3DS, bumping the internal resolution to like 4X, seeing how crazy it can handle it, or even Yuzu, which has gotten really, really good. And that's probably the problem. It's really good. You can use your phone to emulate modern Nintendo Switch games. So no wonder Nintendo is angry at that.
Sure. Yeah. Cause that's taking money away from them immediately. Cause as we all know, Nintendo Switch is powered by Android, which is mind-boggling.
Well, so it's powered by an ARM processor, but not directly running Android. Right. But it's very useful. Like, I have Yuzu installed on my devices, and it's very useful to see how well it runs, like, on modern-day hardware. And you even saw it, like, on Linus Tech tips, videos, like their reviews, they use it as like the, one of their benchmarking tools to benchmark performance of Android flagships. And something I used to do on XDA when I did those long form reviews as well.
Right.
I have to
It's a bummer. I mean, and so you got to wonder if it's going to be sideloading future, like it's going to go back to a underground thing because you can't kill it, right?
Right. People still have the APKs. Like you could still install them. The thing that's not going to happen anymore is continued bug fixing and for future development on a lot of these projects until some other team or project picks it up. But it's kind of like it kind of puts a lot of the unspoken value of a lot of these Android gaming handhelds into question, because a lot of the things they would never directly market the fact that people are using them for emulation, but 90% of people were buying these things so they could use emulators on them. They were not buying them for games that you could get download off of Google Play. I mean, with a few exceptions, but that was one of the very popular reasons why people would buy Android gaming handhelds. Just nobody really wanted to talk about it in the open.
Yeah. Right. So it's a bummer. But
I mean, emulation on Android, like it's a strength of the OS that you could even do this in the first place. And, you know, always was really surprising to me how actually very easy it is to find these things through the Play Store. There's a part of me that like I can see both sides because like, you know, aging gaming hardware, like I'm such a nostalgic person and I have, you know, a very strong connection to my childhood experience playing a lot of these games that you can't actually get anymore. I'm like, I'm not okay with those things just like fizzling off and dying forever. Like I want there to be a way for these things to live on into eternity. And in fact, I think it's important for history. But when you've got a company like Nintendo that has an insanely successful platform like the Nintendo Switch, still very current until they release their next Switch, which is probably sometime soon, you know, that's modern. That is now. And then you've got these emulators that can basically do the same thing on this hardware. It used to be that hardware like a phone was underpowered for modern consoles. And in this case, that isn't necessarily the case. I can totally understand why Nintendo would want to crack down on this.
It's in their rights. You got to. It's in the law that you have to protect your copyright or protect your trademark. You have to enforce it.
Yeah. So right. That is true.
It was also interesting, like a philosophical difference, like an enforcement difference between the Google Play Store and the Apple App Store. Even though you know there are emulators available for iOS and iPadOS, you have to sideload them using like Alt Store or whatever other method they use. Like Apple never allowed them at all on their App Store. Versus Google, pretty much didn't really care. Like you had these emulators available for download through the Google Play Store. You never had to sideload them for the most part.
Because they weren't shipping with games.
They weren't shipping with games.
They weren't shipping with a marketplace for the games.
Even then, Google could have banned them just like Apple did. There's nothing stopping them.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of like different perspective that each of the companies I think holds on that. Google's probably perspective is that they could, in a sense, hide behind the fact that these could be used for that, but they could also be used for good things. It's kind of like Kodi, right? Like the Kodi media thing. You can get that through the Play Store, and like I'd venture to say like 80%, 90% of the people that get Kodi get it because there's pirated content galore all over the place and it's super easy to use, right? But there's that like 10% that like, it's just a media platform for anything. Yeah, sure, it can do that, but Plex. I want it for this. And that's enough. That's enough for it to be okay. That's like Google's stance, I think, generally speaking.
We can't have nice things.
Nope.
Or we can until it becomes too much and the company decides to eradicate them.
I'm surprised they didn't do it earlier. They've been cracking down on even like streamers for a long time. It's a different sphere. But Nintendo is just incredibly protective of their IP for better or for worse. And of course, it's totally their right. They have a very strong brand. It's a very old brand, so they want to protect it. But I do question sometimes, I don't know, the loss of opportunity there. And as you said, Jason, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with like maintain, like there's such a nostalgia for Nintendo. I have it too. I don't know. Like, I know it gets really dicey, but there's something to be said about in elevating the fact that people still have this nostalgia and want to kind of access that experience.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Here's my question though. And so it's funny that we say this because I've got a basement full of consoles that I don't do anything with. Like I'm going to go sell my old Xbox and my old Xbox 360 because I just don't use them anymore. But I'm keeping my Nintendo 64 because I want my kids to play Mario Kart and GoldenEye at some point. So here's my question. And I don't have a Switch and I'm so far beyond this. Does Nintendo makes the old games available now via like didn't they have that on the Wii and the Super Wii or whatever?
They have they do have a lot of games available on Switch. Not everything, but they do make a lot of them available.
The ones that they still have the license for, that they still love their games and stuff like that. Like you probably can't get Burger Time ported to Nintendo NES, right? Because they don't know, they didn't own that game, right? Yeah. So
but
quality of a lot of ports also varies significantly.
Yeah, well that's true. And a lot of the original, you know, like Konami or whatever, these kind of classic, you know, arcade or game franchises are bringing back like mega collections and re-releasing them. And I mean, a part of that is because there is demand and there's obviously demand because people are willing to, you know, do the emulators and stuff.
I would
for the longest time, those things just weren't available anymore. It was like, well, that's lost to the sands of time. If you wanted them, you had to do this. But now, and
ironically, a lot of those ports that are being released for modern consoles actually contain emulators that are used to run those.
Totally. Yes. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would much rather play original Castlevania or Super Star Wars from the Super NES than any game on Switch now, because that's just where my head is at. I mean, as Matthew in the chat, I want to give you a shout out because he said, I remember Burger Time as a kid on Intellivision. I still have my Intellivision in the basement. I'm not getting rid of that. I love it.
Don't get rid of that.
Intellivision was the best. So
nostalgia strong. That's why X-Men 97 is now a thing. I have opinions about that. That's a different show.
All right.
Well, real quick, all you amazing patrons out there, we love you for supporting the show the way you do. Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. You enable us to do this each and every week. And for those of you who are not patrons, the patrons are supporting us so that you can watch it too and listen to it. So they're pretty awesome, right? Patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. And every week we put up a poll to give patrons the opportunity to vote for a story, a news story. And we did that this week. And we also are featuring the art that is sent in, usually AI generated. I guess now we have to do we have to disclose this on YouTube now, I think? who created this AI image?
Joe Catskill from Loyal Patron. He submitted this little cartoonish version of a, I'm assuming this is a bug droid reading the news on his own podcast. And it's very colorful. I like the mix of colors. I like the big eyes as if he's got some startling news to share in his podcast in the microphone.
I like the extra little wires of microphones pouring out of his body as if he's ready for other people to join him, but they aren't there yet.
I also like that the news is about bugs. It's like a newsletter, this week's bugs.
And the other side is the fixes.
Yep. Thank you, Joe, for submitting that one. Please send your bug droid creations to contact@androidfaithful.com. We got a pool of them to pull from already, but we need more. So send them in.
Keep them coming. This is a great thing that we love featuring. So anyways, we put up three news stories for patrons to pick from. And let me see if I can scroll to them. In third place, 19% of people voted for the Pixel 9 made debut Google's adaptive touch feature. In second place, 40% voted for Apple reportedly exploring a partnership with Google for Gemini-powered features on iPhone. And it was neck and neck. Like, we actually had to kind of delay the call on this because it was so close. That was 40%. 41% got the win. And it turns out that this is actually Michal's article. So I'm going to throw it over to Michal. But basically, Android phones, Gemini Nano, getting a pretty cool feature that Google has offered, but on device instead of in the cloud. Tell us about that, Michal.
So basically, a couple of months ago, Google, through their Search Labs experiment feature in the Google app, rolled out a feature that lets you summarize web articles using AI. And if you enable this experiment, go to any article And then you'll see this like get AI summary button that taps, that you tap on it. It shows like a bullet point summary of the article that you're currently on. And I found evidence that looks like this may be powered by Gemini Nano on compatible smartphones in the future. And the article basically just goes over the evidence. It's kind of tough to explain the evidence, but so I highly recommend reading the article if you want to see like what the evidence is. But the TLDR is that this feature may be coming to Gemini Nano powered devices. It'll still be available on other devices, just be running on the cloud through whatever, you know, Gemini Pro model is running this article summary feature. But if you want the on-device, maybe the privacy security aspect of it, you care about that, you can have that be running on-device on devices like the Pixel 8 Pro or the Galaxy S24 series.
I will admit, I've been using this. This first popped up, I remember Michelle, popped up a couple of months ago, right? A couple of weeks ago or so in this year. And I use it quite frequently because so many articles have so much crap and bloat on the pages. And I don't want to have to scroll through and deal with the ads and stuff like that. So I give me a, you know, generate a summary, and I get a little summary of the articles. I know what's coming and make the decision if I want to deal with that and do the deep dive in. So I appreciate this functionality. I think it's great.
You get the Cliff's notes of the internet.
I'll take it. Listen, I'm a busy man.
Just get to the real stuff. Awesome. Yeah, I think that would be a really, really useful feature. And knowing that that's on device, yeah, I think that's going to get a lot of use. Big shout out to Mark Wansel, to Jesse Bernotti, I'm not sure on the last name, Kevin Balancia, three amazing patrons who are with us and supporting us through patreon.com/AndroidFaithful. We love you all. You're so amazing. Thank you for your support. And can't wait to see who we feature on next week's episode when we do this again.
And I will remind everybody that we live stream every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific on youtube.com/DailyTechNewsShow and on twitch.tv/GoodDayInternet. And it is worth it to either watch live or go to YouTube to watch the recording after it comes out to see Wynn use OS X's, the Mac OS's little like hearts that come out and thanking patrons.
She knows all the tricks.
Yes. I have not upgraded to
whatever. I've done it during meetings so many times, you guys.
You can turn it off. I keep telling everyone.
I don't
everyone.
Care. Nope. I'm doing it out of spite now, Ron.
Yeah, I think she's just embraced it at this point.
Out of spite. Okay.
Oh, that's great.
It's part of the thing.
It is.
All right. Coming up, we've got some really great hardware news.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, let's start with you in the hardware block, Michelle, because you've had the Zenfone 11 Ultra for a little while now. What you think?
That's right, Jason. I've had the Zenfone 11 Ultra for about a month now. So they announced this last Thursday, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week. But now that I've had it for a month, I can talk about it in full. And when they announced the Zenfone 11 Ultra last Thursday, it sparked quite a lot of discussion online about whether this is the end of small phones. There was even an article, there was even a video by Marques Brownlee that went viral. It's about like small phones are dead, we killed them or something like that. And it's when you look at the Zenfone 11, it's a bit true. Compared to the Zenfone 8, 9, and 10, which each boasted a smaller than 6-inch display, I think each were 5.9 inches, the Zenfone 11 Ultra has a massive 6.78 inch display. It's not only significantly larger, but also has the same overall design of the ROG Phone 8, minus the air trigger shoulder buttons or the USB-C port on the side. And actually, I'm going to switch my camera over now to...
Crossing fingers.
Yes.
It works!
There you go. And actually, before I show you the phone in full, let me just show you the layout quickly. Since it has the same overall layout as the ROG Phone 8, it also has this off-center USB port, C port on the bottom. You can see it's like on the left. And this makes it a bit awkward to use with some car docks and many third-party telescopic gaming controllers. And that's one aspect that I don't like, that it borrows from the ROG Phone 8. And just to give you a bit of a perspective on how big this phone is. So here's the, on the left, I have the Zenfone 8, and on the right, the Zenfone 11 Ultra.
Like, that is massive.
It's significantly bigger, right?
It almost looks like you're holding the Ultra closer to the camera.
And like, this is the Zenfone 9. You can see the exact same size as the Zenfone 8. And then the Zenfone 10, exact same size as the Zenfone 8 and 7. Compared to that, the Zenfone 11 Ultra is just way bigger, right? So this is clearly a dramatic difference.
You could fit the Zenfone 10 completely inside the Zenfone 11 Ultra. It completely envelops it. That's how much bigger it is on all, like, it's wider and taller. That's crazy.
And before I, the reason I'm not going to show you, like, my actual Zenfone 11 Ultra without the case is because I did an oopsie, and I dropped it, and I cracked the back. So here are some photos of the phone before I did the oopsie.
Oh,
it's quite a beautiful phone. It's quite a beautiful phone, and I'm sad I can't show you the actual back. But here are some photos.
I feel like we need some hard music to play over this.
I'm glad you got photos of it before you broke it. That's great.
It was during this photo shoot that the incident happened, unfortunately. Okay, so back to my window.
I've been there. I can only laugh.
It happens. I know. I know.
It happens.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm pretty used to the bigger phones. The large size hasn't really bothered me. But if you are coming from the Zenfone 8 or Zenfone 9 or Zenfone 10, you might find this bigger size challenging or off-putting to use. But it being bigger actually has some material benefits, as there's now room for a much larger 5,500 milliamp hour battery versus the 4,300 milliamp hour battery in the Zenfone 10. Battery life and charging for me have been pretty great, by the way. I've been averaging about 5 to 6 hours of screen on time each day. And because of the larger size, there's also room for a third camera. There's a 32 megapixel 3x optical zoom telephoto lens with OIS on board. And there's also a 50 megapixel IMX890 sensor coupled with ASUS Signature 6-axis hybrid gimbal OIS, plus a 13 megapixel 120 degree field of view ultra wide angle lens. And the Zenfone 10 also had a 50 megapixel main camera. I think it had a IMX7 something. So my overall impression of the camera is that it's just fine. I think I'll save you the time of going back and forth between the windows, and I'll just share the Amazon photos link and the Amazon video link and just talk about the photos so you can look for yourself. My overall impression of the camera is just fine. Like, the photos and videos that it takes aren't bad or stellar, and that's fine for me. I've never noticed an issue with inaccurate colors or out-of-focus objects or people, although I do think the bokeh effect in the dedicated portrait mode looks noticeably fake in some of the photos that I took. The 3x telephoto looks pretty good, like the photos from it, except, you know, it does offer, like, enhanced zoom up to 30x, which I think is kind of unusable. I think the standout feature of the Zenfone camera, and it's been good since the older devices, is the stabilization. Even with the default adaptive stabilization mode, it's amazing. Like, you can see, if I'm going to the camera, you see there's an adaptive stabilization mode, and there's also a hyper steady mode. Both are amazing. Like, it's look like you're walking around with a gimbal on your hand when you're walking around taking vlogging style videos with it. If I had any complaints, I'd say that, you know, there's no consistent video recording resolutions. The low light video quality is not that great. Doesn't support Google's HDR, Ultra HDR format. And low light selfies, even though ASUS says they imply a noise reduction algorithm to them to make them look better, I still think they don't look all that great overall. However, I do think the phone generally takes great selfies in good lighting conditions, and the addition of the 0.8x wide angle mode, here you can see the webcam that I'm using, is a pretty great option to take group selfies. There are other AI camera features like AI portrait video, AI object sense, light trail mode, etc. I only tried out the AI portrait video, which applies a bokeh effect to in real time to human and other pet subjects. I think it's a little gimmicky. It is kind of cool when it works, though. Moving on from the camera, there's also larger dual stereo speakers. You have a speaker at the bottom and a, I think, speakers at the top grill, the screen to body ratio is like 95 or something like some crazy like that. So there's barely enough room for actual big speakers, but it does work pretty well. And, you know, if you do care about that, there's also a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack at the bottom, which is nice. To be honest, like, I don't really care about that anymore because it's been so long since phones dropped them. Mm-hmm. But if you do care about that, it's nice to have. The display, though, it has a full HD resolution LTPO AMOLED display that goes up to 120 hertz in most apps and up to 144 hertz in most games. One thing that I don't like about the refresh rate is that in the default auto mode, for some reason, Zen UI, like, it loves to force the refresh rate down to 60 hertz in apps like Reddit or in apps like Telegram or in many apps that have like a web view that use like a, that integrate a web browser. So it's kind of jarring to like use a lot of apps that I frequently use, which are social media apps that have like web views. They're scrolling at a stuttery 60 hertz, and then I open Chrome or some other app and like the settings of the launcher, and it's a buttery smooth 120 hertz. So typically I just like to stick it to 120 hertz constant. I don't let the OS handle the refresh rate at all. And I hope, you know, Asus kind of looks at that and fixes that. Rounding out the specs, there's an aluminum frame, which I, again, I can't show you here, and an IP68 rating, 68.5 watt wired and 15 watt wireless charging, and Qualcomm Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 paired with up to 16 gigs of RAM and 512 gigabytes UFS 4.0 storage. As you'd expect with these specs, the Zenfone 11 Ultra has no trouble whatsoever handling whatever I throw at it, which, as I mentioned before, the amount of stuff you can do with a phone this powerful is kind of waning with the golden age of emulators winding down. But there are some stuff you can do. Like, there are some on-device AI features that this phone packs that I guess, you know, kind of do need this processing power. Like, there's an AI transcription feature in the Sound Recorder app that I can show you quickly right here. It's basically, there we go. Let me show my, I had this recording. I just did this brief recording as a test, and it just transcribed this in real time. There's also a generate summary feature that runs on-device AI, and it just summarizes it. It was like a quick 5-second clip. I doubt it can actually summarize this thing. It also has, you know, an AI call translator in the dialer app, AI noise cancellation, VoIP apps like WhatsApp, and an AI semantic search feature. So the semantic search feature, basically, like, you take photos of people, it can like recognize people. It can recognize objects like food, sky, vehicle, plant, etc., things like that. The AI transcription call translator features rely on language packs. There's also a on-device, this one I thought was kind of cool at first, an on-device AI wallpaper generator. So if you're familiar with the Pixel phones, you can generate wallpapers using the cloud. Well, this one's totally on-device using Stable Diffusion model that then is upscaled using a super resolution technique. I thought it would be useful at first and neat, but unfortunately, because it's all running on device, you're kind of limited in the quality of the images you can get. And also, you have to download a 3 gigabyte model to even make this work. So I'm not as sold on it anymore. But if you like having all your data run on device, then I guess it could be useful. Lastly, the Zenfone 11 Ultra, as you can see, runs Zen UI on top of Android 14 with, unfortunately, only 2 years of OS updates and 4 years of security updates promised. It does pack some nifty features like built-in integration with Microsoft's Link to Windows feature. If I could show you right here, Link to Windows. This is integrated built-in, which means that you can stream apps from your phone to your Windows PC, share your clipboard, or use it as an instant hotspot. There's also Asus's Glide X software, which does much of the same thing, but with Asus devices. There's also a new Video Genie feature that offers additional controls when using media apps. And for the first time in Zen UI, integrated support for Google's live captions feature and their personal safety apps. So I really do think that Zen UI overall is pretty neat for what it has. And I really like that you can customize it. It's basically like stock Android, but with a lot of useful enhancements and the ability to customize a lot of the default settings. But there are still some annoyances, like the fact that background app management is still enabled by default, which could be why, for me, Gmail notifications has just been hit or miss. Like, I've not been getting them on time. So I've had to, like, disable manually a lot of the background app management settings. Mm-hmm. Now, just to talk about a bit about the price. It starts at $8.99. It's not on sale yet in the US, or €9.99. It's kind of difficult to recommend this phone because, you know, sure, it might be $100 cheaper than the Pixel 8 Pro or S24 Plus at their respective MSRPs, but both those devices frequently go on sale. They offer longer software support and they have more software bells and whistles. On the other hand, there's the OnePlus 12, which offers comparable specs and two more years of OS updates, plus an additional year of security updates at $100 less. I think Asus had an incredibly compelling offering with last year's Zenfone 10, which had flagship tier specs and a compact form factor and a great starting price of $699. It's a shame that wasn't more popular, which may be why we have this hybrid Zenfone ROG phone in the form of the Zenfone 11 Ultra. Hopefully they have a smaller Zenfone 11 model in the works. Otherwise, I think it's fair to say that the small phone experiment is only going to be kept alive by niche third-party OEMs and not big players like Asus.
Cool.
All right. And that's my review of the Zenfone 11 Ultra. I do think it's an overall solid device with a couple of AI bells and whistles. It's just a tough thing to sell considering the competition this year, you know, from like it's really hard to beat 7 years of support and all the AI features when you don't have the kinds of capabilities and partnerships with Google that Samsung does, or the kinds of in-house AI software engineering that Google does.
It's a tough market right now for sure, but I mean they're in it for a reason. They're an established brand. There's got to be an audience that's loyal, right? We're 11 generations into the phone, right? So yeah, you're right. I mean, it is hard, you know, if new user comes in and trying to compare the 7 years of support or the other stuff, but they've got to have some level of they've got to compete somehow, right? And so, you know, the best way they can do it is by making a really pretty phone and throwing in whatever features they can. So I credit Asus for putting together a compelling case with the phone for sure. So.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, right. It's been a long time since I had like an Asus phone experience. I'm talking years at this point, so
yeah,
I was curious to kind of hear kind of how they're doing nowadays.
So. It's a big phone. That's a big phone.
It's a big phone.
Chonker. I know, indeed. Well, let's go in the opposite direction from that, though, and real quickly because we are running long. But so Motorola's a brand that I've long time loved what they did in the mid range, and it looks like they've got another year of me continuing my appreciation because the new G series is really, really looking interesting. So the Moto G Power 5G, which sells for $299, and the Moto G 5G, which sells for $199, both have NFC, vegan leather back panels, which is totally a thing now, which is awesome.
Totally a thing.
I know. Remember we joked about it years ago and now it's a thing. It's got a micro SD slot for those of you who need it, those of you who want it. It's got a Courage port for those of you who still love it. I don't know why. So these are really good phones. Like they look to be really, I haven't got my hands on one yet, but they look to be really good phones at a really good price. The Moto G Power 5G has got wireless charging at 15 watts, which is the first time. And honestly, find me a mid Ranger or a low-end device that has wireless charging, right? That's pretty rare.
That's it.
It's got a 6.7-inch 1080p LCD display that runs at 120 hertz. It's running on the MediaTek Density 720 chipset with 8 gig of RAM. It's got dual cameras, 50-megapixel main with OIS, and an 8-megapixel ultra-wide with autofocus that can double as the macro camera. And it's got a 5,000 milliamp battery, so that's pretty solid. That's why it's got the power in there. And then the Moto G 5G is a 6.6-inch 720p LCD display with 120 hertz Qualcomm Snapdragon 4 Gen 1 and then with 4 gig of RAM. It's got two cameras, the 50 megapixel main and a 2 megapixel macro, which probably isn't that great. And no announcement about their commitment to updates. So, you know, whatever Motorola's been doing, I assume it's going to be at least that, but we'll see if they jump on the bandwagon of providing more length for the devices. But $199, $299. These are very well-priced mid-rangers, and nice to see the mid-range, like on the low end of price in the mid-range, but still delivering the spec. So, way to go, Motorola! Yeah. I would like to get my hands on these, so I need to chase down a contact at Motorola. So,
Getting the wireless.
I'm so surprised that that only these now, that this range of phone is only now just getting the NFC. And I only know that because one of my only other friends who has an Android phone who isn't a dev or engineer has like a kind of lower end Motorola phone. He's like, yeah, I don't have NFC. I'm like, what? Like, how do you not have NFC? I just kind of assumed it was kind of like
ubiquitous, right?
Same. Yeah.
I'll tell him about this phone. Yeah.
Like wireless charging, I can understand that not being mid-range or low end. But NFC, I just kind of assumed like, oh yeah, NFC.
It's a component that costs money.
One of those things that's in everything now.
It increases the BOM, right? Makes it more expensive. Yeah.
But I don't know, like especially with tap to pay being everywhere. Yeah. And it hit me weird. Like, what do you mean you don't have NFC? And I was like, give me your damn phone. Let me see what this is. I'm like, yeah, anyway. I just think it's interesting. Yeah. Yep. But you know what else is interesting is and especially for those of you who are SoC nerds, the Snapdragon 8S, not just 8, 8S Gen 3 has been announced, and we got a good idea of some specs. So this is really interesting because we've talked a lot about the Snapdragon, both 8 Gen 2 and Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 recently, both being, you know, very successful chipsets, you know, high performing, you know, a lot of good, you know, as a system on chip device reviews. And it's kind of interesting to look at this new Snapdragon 8S Gen 3, and to look at it from both a kind of, you know, specifics of the configuration. I mean, we don't have to go into like real details, but the most important, I think the thing that you should take away from it, it's really interesting because this is meant to be a cheaper SoC, but that still has premium features. And in terms of just like the configuration and the cores it uses, it's like a blend of both the 8 Gen 2 and the 8 Gen 3, where it's actually using the same cores. And if I'm getting something wrong, I mean, yell at me because this is no longer my area of expertise. But it's using the same cores as the 8 Gen 3, but in a different configuration, also at lower clock speed. So it very much is sitting in a very interesting place in the middle. And it is meant to be kind of like a more affordable chip, but what is kind of one of the things that is that they're looking to make the 8S Gen 3 stand out is AI features, because you cannot have a processor that doesn't have, you know, AI specific functionality. And yeah, so what does, I guess, really distinguish the the 8S Gen 2, I messed it up again.
Yeah, it's easy.
The 8S. I'm just going to call it the 8S. So what really is interesting about the 8S, you know, in that it is a bit kind of, I guess, lower spec than the 8 Gen 3, is that it does have, you know, on-device AI computation. So it is kind of like bridging that gap. Because, I mean, we recently just talked about how, surprisingly, the Pixel 8 won't get, is that right? Pixel 8 won't get Gemini Nano, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you think about that, whatever that gap is in the hardware, not saying that this processor in particular is plugging that particular hole, but that, you know, there is kind of something to bring AI and all of these new kind of AI computationally intensive things to mid-range phones. So that's kind of basically what it seems like this 8S is kind of, you know, geared towards, not Hundo P, you know, high end premium flagship phones, but, you know, something in the middle, something a little more affordable, but that can still handle AI. It also supports the Wi-Fi 7 standard. It can support, you know, QHD plus displays at 144 hertz and also 4K at 60 hertz. The actual video it supports is a little bit down. So that's where, you know, there's going to be some trade-offs. And some of that is like, for example, in the video support. But there's plenty of other nice premium features. If you're like an image processing nerd, there is triple 18-bit image system, image signal processing paired with the hexagon neural processing unit, which actually could lend to very, you know, advanced features. They have this always sensing feature that should help with things like face unlock and, oh my God, my chair just decided to break under me. QR codes. Oh my gosh, I'm sweating now. And also the combination of the image signal processing and this neural processor should, you know, allow kind of more MIDI rangy phones, lower premium phones, boost image quality in dark conditions, and also do some outpainting, which you can think of, and which this article explained as uncropping, kind of not in like not like the opposite of enhance, where you get more on the outside. Anyway, AI features, and also still allow a maximum camera resolution of 2000 MP. I think I wrote, wait, did I say 200, 2000? I missed a zero. I think it was, it's 200. Sorry, not 2000, 200 MP, and still bring you some gaming, you know, beefiness with the Adreno GPU. So yeah, for all of you processor nerds out there, the 8S Gen 2 has some really interesting stuff. And I think it's really cool to see, like, trying to bring, you know, the fancy features, the pizzazz and the AI to not just expensive ass $1,000 phones. So we'll see what happens and see what phones have this. There is already kind of like declared, support for this, kind of uptake of this SoC from brands like Honor, Realme and Xiaomi. So maybe we'll hear more about some 8S Gen 3 phones in the future. I'm going to fix my chair real quick.
You brought up a really scary. Good question during that, you fix your chair. What is it called when it expands the photo, right? Like, yeah. Is that generative? I guess it's generative AI.
It is generative because it's making the picture
extrapolation. What it is.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. That's the correct term.
Extrapolation. Or outfilling is another.
Outpainting. Yeah. Google Photos did that to my, remember the video example I showed you where it extrapolated my daughter's arm and created it that it wasn't in the video, even though she does have an arm. Yeah, I was because like you're right. Cropping is one thing, but when you're adding to it, it's kind of generative extrapolation. There's got to be a more.
I actually did a live demo of that, the feature in question, basically on the Galaxy S24 when we had that episode for that review. Like when I tilted, there's one image where I tilted it a little bit, and then it used generative AI to fill in. Like because when you rotate in photo, right, it doesn't have the corners like information in the corners anymore. It used it's generative AI to fill in that bits of information and created a fully landscape photo again.
Wow.
Right. That's amazing.
Living in the future the premium phones.
But I will say, like bringing AI to the masses, this is how it's got to happen, right? It's got to, you know, when you start seeing these features in the mid-rangers from from other manufacturers, like this is how it's got to happen. So cool.
Yeah. Time and time again, the elite premiums get it first and then it starts to, I'll say trickle down, but you know, starts to the technology gets cheaper and more apt for kind of the restricted resources of smaller phones. Okay,
right. Wireless charging coming to the Moto G.
What about NFC, right? Man?
See? Yeah, you NFC. Lead with your NFC. Forget about that one, but yeah. So this is an interesting rumor. I will go ahead and preface it by that, but I will say before getting to the rumor. The Apple Watch, okay? Very much steadfast when it comes to committing to the square/rectangular design. And remember in the beginning, it was a point of contention for a lot of people. It was like, oh my God, that watch doesn't look like a watch. It looks like a phone screen on your wrist. Like, I want a watch that looks like a watch. And it kind of divided people into separate camps. If you remember early on, Samsung, and I have one here to show off here, Samsung did the square thing. This isn't their first smartwatch that I have in my hand if you're watching the video version of this show. This is their second. This is the Samsung Gear Live. And boy, is it a piece of junk. But anyways, these things have clearly come a long way in 10 years, let me just say. If you saw this in person, you would absolutely agree with me. We could spend a whole other episode on why this thing is a piece of junk. But Samsung did the square thing, and then they switched to the round thing, which, you know, I've got the OnePlus Watch 2 on my wrist. It's round. A lot of my favorite wearables have been round. Rumor has it, according to Sam Mobile, that Samsung is considering a return to the squarish form factor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Still very much a maybe, according to the source. So this is just kind of more like a thought experiment than anything. Like, should Samsung try this? And if Samsung does this, do we think Samsung's going to be like, nope, all of our future phones are going to be square? Or is this just Samsung saying, well, actually, now at this point, things have kind of iterated and grown enough that maybe we can offer both.
Give people options. Jason, do you remember the Guatcher?
The Guatcher, yeah.
What on earth?
Was that LG?
It was the watch.
Was it LG? The G Watch R.
Oh, the Guatch.
Yeah, LG G Watch, yes.
The Guatch R. Yeah,
LG G Watch R.
Yeah, it's funny. When this story hit up, I was just like, oh, there aren't square. Like square makes sense. Like, I would wear a square phone, a watch. Like,
I will say square phone screens are probably easier to dev for than freaking circles. Or
probably
I mean, because UI, where do you put the UI when everything's circular?
I mean, has that been a hindrance for wearables on Android? I mean, developers have obviously, they've learned over time because we're 10 years, 11 years into this whole wearable thing, I think. Maybe even longer than that.
I think generally, yes. I think generally, yes. But there is, I mean, I'm just thinking about it off the top of my head. Like, yeah, I mean, just in general, wearables are such a smaller, have so much less real estate. It's going to be hard in general. And that's part of it is just that what features can you provide that have utility to someone on such a small screen? Yeah. I think, to be fair, the use case, the difference between a small square versus a small circle is not trivial, but it's probably like the same. I think there's like a general challenge of, man, this is not very many pixels. But I do think there is probably something about circular screens. It kind of makes me think of the Motorola flat tire a little bit, where this is kind of different, right? Because now circular wearables have the full screen, but that feels kind of like in the same genre of there are some like physical limitations that the UI has to sort of get around and play with, and I can't imagine that sloped or circular sides rather just give you even less space. And then of course it's not just, you can't just pick square or circle. You have to support everything. And heaven forbid if someone comes up with a triangular phone, but that's not a bad idea. If someone wants to do that, I mean, I'll take a look at it. I just wonder, but I don't know. A square phone would be marginally to moderately easier to develop for than a circular screen. I will say that.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I would like to see it. I was just like more choice, more opportunity, I guess, right?
Would you like to see a triangular watch?
Dun, dun, dun.
Of course, this is not a smart watch, but it is triangular, and I would love to see what developers did with that.
That'd be cool.
A nightmare.
That'd be very cool.
Especially like depending on how you orient it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry. I'm just imagining that. That would be horrible. Yep. Now I kind of want to do that just for funsies. Just make a triangular watch face.
I was like, somebody's had to have just like, yeah, sure, I'll do the triangular smartwatch so that we can be the one example that appears when people search.
They'll always be talked about, right?
Yeah, so. Always be the first.
All right, well, the round out hardware, we were talking about Google I.O. earlier in the show, and it's also the time of year for the Pixel A series to be coming, and we've had some leaks coming from the Pixel 8a. We talked about it a little last week. Pixel 8a is getting a little more leaky, which always means that it's getting closer. It's getting closer. The latest leaks are that the OLED display will refresh up to 120 hertz. Last year it was 90 hertz, so that'll make it a little more buttery, right? I think that's the term you used there, Michelle. And then it's got 1400 nits peak HDR brightness. We'll have a DisplayPort output enabled in Android 14 QPR 3 beta and running the Tensor G3, which is the same as the 8 series. So the 8A getting a little more leaky, a little more real. So we'll see. Love that display port. So, all right.
No upgrades to the camera, says the article as well.
No upgrades to the cameras.
But, the camera's always has been pretty spot on. So.
Yep. And then more preparation coming for Google I.O., I only assume, because the YouTube Music team has been, YouTube Music product team has been very busy, it seems, lately. A whole bunch of stuff happened with YouTube Music lately. First and foremost, the long-awaited song search is finally coming to YouTube Music. This is similar to a feature that rolled out late last year for YouTube. It's a dedicated button next to the search bar, and it shows a voice or song choice, and you can hum the song or play a song to find it in your library. Interestingly enough, also Google Play Music had much better song search than YouTube Music does. YouTube Music song search is not very good in the app, and so I'm glad to see more focus around this to zero in on the song you want to listen to. Also, YouTube Music is getting a trim silence feature, according to our friends over at 9to5 Google, who looked at the APK of the app for a clue. And those of you who listen to podcasts know that trim silence is a feature that's often found in many podcast apps, much like Pocket Cast, my podcast app of choice. The code string says, quote, skip stretches of silence during episodes. And, you know, what else is called an episode other than a podcast? So I guess YouTube Music is shoring things up for the podcast stuff. I hope to see a little more at Google I.O. about YouTube Music, about the podcast support, about the whole product in general. So maybe it's starting to happen. So
cool. Still a dedicated YouTube Music user.
Yeah,
Ron Richards.
I'm still using it. It's my own. I mean, it's just all there. I don't know.
Yeah, so you get used to it over time. I'm sure.
I did recently. I did just take. I still had the 100 plus gig of my Google Play Music takeout download in a folder on my desktop, and I finally just moved that to an external hard drive. Just to
like, I clearly don't need this.
Like, no, I'm gonna get to it one day. I have all the screenshots and everything, but like, I just need to get to it. So yeah, I have to run a div between what was in Google Play Music versus what is in my hard drive collection, and then like, but I who has the time? So
yeah, yeah, it is the time spent doing that. Is it really worth it?
I like, might be. I don't know. Depends
maybe,
on how,
maybe
depends,
not.
Depends on how OCD I want to get. But
yeah, there you go. So. Yeah, that's it. Well, speaking of music, Spotify is doing apparently or probably going to do. No, this is launched. Doing what I hated YouTube Music for doing, which was adding music videos.
Yep.
They're launching a beta of the feature in select countries. US is not one of them. So not for now are you getting it in the US, but eventually you probably will. But there's going to be, similar to YouTube Music, there's going to be a slider that essentially allows you to switch between, you know, the music version and the music video. But I also realized, like, my hang up on this was very particular to a certain reason. And that's because at the time, my daughters were younger than they are now, as we all are, because time. And they were much more likely to seek out the music device that we had for just music and use it as another conduit for watching a screen of some sort.
That's my biggest problem now, is that I've got the Nest Hub in the kitchen, and the kids yell songs, and then it pulls up the music video, and then they just stand there and watch the cartoon. Where if it puts up the dumb song from Despicable Me, they'll dance around the kitchen and have a dance party. But as soon as the video starts, you know. So Spotify and YouTube, Jason, do not care, because guess what earns more money? Video ads. Video ads have higher CPM than audio ads. This is the only reason why they're doing it. So.
See, and I thought it was just like one of those. Yeah, I mean, that obviously makes sense from a business perspective. But I always just kind of thought, like, well, music and music videos, they kind of do go hand in hand. And I mean, if you're listening to a song and it's just as easy to also play the video that is attached to that song, then why wouldn't you? But your reason makes a lot more sense.
Well, I challenge that also, in that, like, as someone who grew up watching music videos, who, like, my favorite bands I found out about by watching 120 Minutes on MTV,
you know,
30 fucking years, 30 years ago, way too long.
Welcome to the show, old man.
The concept, the paradigm of sitting and watching a music video is much different than listening to records or listening to a playlist or listening to a mix, as we used to call it, and that sort of thing. And they YouTube and Spotify treat them the same, which I think is not right and not accurate. But to them, it's monetizable. That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
So
it is funny when YouTube Music first integrated videos, and a lot of times also in that vein, music videos are a little more cinematic than the music. And I'm doing a workout, I'm listening to a song, all of a sudden I start hearing like car noise or street noise, and I'm like, what happened? And it's because the music video version got like rolled into my playlist, and I'm in like the 30 second to 2 minute intro to someone's cinematic masterpiece that I just wanted the song, which is fine. Like, again, that's like a different setting, right? I want, like, music, as you said, music and video are obviously and less obviously different experiences.
Yep.
So
silly, but
anyway,
yeah.
Video is very, very picky complaint. Yeah. Monetization.
Good point. All right, round us out, Michelle.
Yeah, so if you're not familiar, if you ever try to download and import a pass, a digital pass that you've gotten in the .pk pass format, which is the format that Apple developed for its own Apple Wallet system, you may have noticed that you've had to use a third-party app to convert it so that you can import it into Google Wallet. Well, soon you won't have to use a third-party app anymore because Google Wallet is finally rolling out support for importing and converting digital passes that are saved in Apple's PK pass format. And one user on Telegram told me that they got this and they shared a video with me that shows them importing a generic PK pass file into Google Wallet. And then other users chimed in responding to me saying that they also see it on their device. I don't have this yet, but from what users are telling me, this is slowly rolling out and a lot of users are able to add passes in this format now. Now, you probably don't see this format a lot anymore. Like, it really depends on where you live, what services you use, what, you know, like public transit systems you use, what airlines you use. Like, it really depends. There are still some services out there that don't support Google Wallet. They only send you their passes in the PK pass format. And if that describes you, then you may find this incredibly useful. If not, you probably will never use this feature.
Interesting. I don't know if I find that useful or not, but we'll find out.
I've never encountered a PK pass file out in the wild.
Neither have I. I didn't even know. I was looking. I was like, I was just looking to see. Like, I've never heard of that format either. So,
so. Excellent.
Cool.
All right, that's app news. Now we got some feedback. Got some emails. Contact at androidfaithful.com is how you can get involved with us in the feedback section, and we'll start with you, Wynn. What you got?
Yeah, and we've got a really great tip from listener Linda. I just discovered the other day that you can pinch to zoom in Google Messages to make the text bigger. I don't think I ever saw this anywhere. It makes a big difference to my almost 60-year-old eyes, and it may help some others. I don't know if it's just a Pixel thing, but it works on my 7 Pro. Linda from Long Island. And yeah, I do want to note this is actually, I love that you pointed this out, Linda, and it's interesting because like I know you can like kind of zoom to, you can pinch to zoom on a lot of different, you know, content and apps like Gmail and Chrome or whatever. But usually what happens, well, often what happens is that the text itself will zoom, but the UI itself will not. And I think, and I did try to say that, but Google Messages does a good job at kind of making everything kind of like, I don't know, just fit. I don't know. It just seems like a more fluid experience. Anyway, it's a really good tip. And yeah, it's done like very well. You don't have to go into your settings or nothing. So thank you so much, Linda.
Yeah. I mean, it's another case of like, these are one of those things that I feel like, what is the percentage of features that are on our devices and on these apps that users don't know about? Right. And like, you stumble on it by accident. Like, that's the same thing. Like, I did once I did it by accident. I'm like, oh, everything's big now. And I quickly made it small again.
Yeah.
But for someone who, you know, has poor eyesight or needs, you know, things bigger, mm-hmm. but like, you know, like having that level of control is great. How do you popularize that? How do you get the word out about that? It's just, it's, you know, I find it, I this is something that like I knew about, but like realized that not everybody does. And so it's always good to share these tips when we get them and little hacks and little things that we know our phones can do that the other person might not know about. So,
yeah. Yeah. My wife swears by that. And I think she stumbled on it too. Cause I wasn't aware of it when she discovered it. She's like, did you know that it did this? And it's like, she just accidentally did it. And then it's like, wait a minute, I can make this all bigger. Yeah. Why not?
Cool. Well, thank you. Long Island represent. Yo.
Thank you, Linda. All right, Michelle.
And our next email comes in from Richard from Manchester. Writing in, hey all, love the show. I have an issue with Google Maps I wonder if you can help me with. We often go on walks in the city and I use Google Maps to help us get around. My problem is when I need to use two hands to push my wife's wheelchair, my phone somehow will get trapped accidentally and go into things like, tapped accidentally and go into things like connection settings. So when I try and glance at my phone to see what turn to take, we have to stop and sort it out. Is there a way to lock my screen while using Maps to navigate it? So it can not be accidentally tapped and take me to random screens. Keep up the good work. Richard from Manchester.
So I thought this was a great question. I looked into it a little earlier because I'm not sure. Maybe I couldn't quite figure out the logic, but I know you have control over when the display times out, but you also have control over when the screen locks. And by going into the settings for both display timeout and screen lock, you could do a kind of thing where the screen lock happens after 15 seconds, but the screen doesn't time out for 10 minutes, and therefore the screen is locked and you can still see the display. I don't know if that will work. I didn't test it, and part of me was worried that it might not work. But I do know, I did see that there are some apps out there that allow you to take more control over the screen. There's one called Screen Alive, Keep Screen On, and there's another one called, I think, Touch Lock. Yeah, Touch Lock, Screen Lock, which all lets you fuss with the settings to keep your display on and avoid the screen from being touched. The challenge here, though, is really a security issue, because if you have locked, if your phone is locked and you can't interface with it, how do you unlock, you know, like those are the kind of the challenges, right? And so
I think what Richard is looking for mostly to keep the phone on the app, Maps app, without navigating away to another app. And one way you can do that is with the built-in screen pinning feature. It's something you have to go into settings and enable, but then once you do, you can swipe up to the recents menu and then long press on the icon and tap pin app. I think I forgot exactly what it's called. But you can pin it to where you have to like consciously do a combination of buttons to exit from the screen pinning mode so that you'll stay on the Maps app no matter what you press until you do this combination of gestures.
I didn't even know you could do that. Wait, so how do you do that again? So you're in the app. So I'm in Maps, right?
It's you have to enable it. You first have to go to settings. It differs on every OS. Like I'm right now, I have a Zen phone, so what I say now won't apply to Pixel.
Okay, but he's on a Pixel 7, right?
He's on a Pixel. It should be like an app pinning.
App pinning, yeah. So I went into so I want to make
sure enable app pinning.
So go to settings and search settings and just type in pin, and the first one that comes up is app pinning.
And then go to the recents menu, and then long press on the icon. There should be an option to pin.
Hang on, you're going too fast, Michelle. Wait, hold on. Go to
After you enable app pinning, swipe up to the recents screen.
Just wait. You're still going too fast. So tap on app pinning in settings, and then what it'll do is it'll take you to the more security and privacy screen and scroll you down to the bottom, and it'll flash app pinning, which is at the very, very bottom. You tap that. And then you flip the switch to say use app pinning, and it will tell you when app is pinned, personal data may be accessible, pinned apps may open other apps, only use app pinning with people you trust. So hit OK. Once you do that, now, Michelle, what do you do?
Now you swipe up to go to the recents menu, swipe up and hold like Jason is showing on video.
Yep.
Then you long press on the app icon, and then you tap pin.
That's so cool.
And that'll pin the app to your screen. So you won't be able to exit it until you perform the gesture. I forgot what gesture it is to exit it.
Unpin, swipe up and hold.
Swipe up and hold.
So if I try and swipe out, I don't want to show that. But yes, swipe up and hold, and that will release it.
And so what that will do is that will keep that app pinned so you can't go to any other app. But if his phone gets tapped, it's still getting tapped within that app, but still, at least you're within there, right?
Yeah, so, at least you're still in Google Maps. Like, it's not going to stop you from accidentally exiting navigation in Google Maps, but at least it'll keep you on Google Maps.
Yeah, that's the solve. Way to go, Michelle. That's awesome. So,
there you go.
Very cool. Yeah. I love helping people.
What was the version of Android where app pinning was introduced? Because I remember that was a big deal.
Is that Marshmallow? It's really old.
Yeah, it is.
It's a really old feature.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's too funny. All right, cool. Excellent. All right.
Lollipop.
Lollipop.
Pinning feature was introduced by Google. Lollipop. There you go.
Lollipop.
That's too funny. Do you remember Jason Lollipop? Anyway. Okay. So we got one more email, which comes in from Chris from Washington, D.C. And Chris writes in and says, as a faithful user of Pixel phones, and before that Motorola, I am wondering, what does one give up if you switch to nothing OnePlus, Samsung, or Motorola phones now? It is easy to compare the hardware spec differences, but I know Google offers things on the software level. For example, how does it feel to lose the spam call filtering and call screening? Are there any other software service benefits for being on a Pixel that are not replicated on the other devices? On the other hand, are there software service benefits to being on one of the other devices that are not obvious? Since each of you frequently change phones, have you noticed anything you missed when you have left one phone for another, other than camera differences? And I thought this was a great question given the four of us, right? Because I've been riding the Pixel train for several years now, and despite loving the OnePlus Open, I was afraid to get off of it. When I know you've bounced between Samsung to the Pixel Fold and that sort of thing, Michelle, right? I think you're driving the Zen phone lately as your daily, right? So like, I'm really curious what you all think is to like, what are the pros and cons to not being on Pixel versus being on one of the other phones? I mean, I know it's Samsung. They've got this whole ecosystem you could tap into if you want to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times the features are similar, just named different things. Yeah, but I do think that the call filtering, the call screening, those are features that I notice when I don't have them when I'm on a different phone. Because when I'm on a Pixel, I absolutely get that screening stuff, and I don't on other devices, and I appreciate having it.
Yeah.
For most features, there's going to be some equivalent, or at least some functional equivalent that has most, like 80-85%, goes 85 away there on what you previously had in your old phone. Some features just aren't available on other devices. Like, for example, one of the annoyances that I've dealt with on the Zenfone 11, and actually most other devices that aren't Pixel, is the fact that when I want to select something in an app, right, on Pixel, it's easy. You can just swipe up to the recent screen, and then it uses OCR. So you can select anything on the app that you're in. On the Zenfone, I have to kind of take a screenshot of it, open it, that screenshot in Google Lens, and then I can select the text that I want to copy or highlight or whatever, right? On the Pixel, now on the Pixel 8 and the Pixel 7, or in the Galaxy S24, you can use circle to search to select text on screen, which makes it really easy. I do that all the time, right? Selecting text on screen because I want to highlight something and save it in a note or share it with someone else. But it's a little bit annoying to do that on a Zenfone because it's just not available to do.
It's so ironic, Michelle, that you said that's your example, because here I am staying loyal to the Pixel now through like three generations, and I still don't have circle to search on my Pixel 8 Pro. But
yeah,
and I mean, Ron, if you had a S24, you might have circle to search right now. And so I think it's interesting because especially now with some of those Pixel features, and as we're seeing, Samsung is kind of now partnering a lot more closely and kind of taking on some of these like previously Pixel exclusive features into themselves. So I don't know, like for me, like even less, I think my reasons for really enjoying being back on Pixel Fold are more dev related. I like being and more enthusiast dev related. Like I like being able to be part of the QPRs. I like seeing what comes on first. And I like as a dev, just having a Pixel phone because it is stock Android. And again, like because I can kind of get the betas, it allows me to do my job better. But there's so much on Samsung, even before all of the Galaxy AI features, that I don't know. I kind of miss now because it's highly customizable. So I don't have not much at this point, especially with the way that things are going with the assistants and AI. So man,
yeah, it is really
get to that point.
It is hard. There's so many features now on like Google's whatever they don't have a name for the OS and the Pixel. There's so many different features on Zen UI. So many different features in One UI. It is so hard to list all of them and say, here's an equivalent in Google's OS. Here's an equivalent in Zen UI. You're going to be missing out on some features. You're going to have to go digging around. You're going to have to like ask on forums and like watch reviews to figure out. You're just going to have to. One thing I really recommend, it's for some reason a lot of people don't seem to do. You get a new phone, just look through the settings. Go through all the settings one time. You'll probably find one or two things you didn't know existed. A lot of people just set up their phones and then just download their apps and that's it. Just go through settings sometime at least. You'll do yourself a favor. So I have a lot of time down the line.
Interesting stuff. So if you want to weigh in on the pros or cons of being on a Pixel or on another manufacturer's device, email us at contact@androidfaithful.com. We want to hear from you. If you've got other tips you want to share with other listeners, please email us in as well. It's always great to hear from everybody. We thank everybody for staying in touch with us. So.
Indeed we do. Thank you everybody for sending in all your feedback. Thank you for watching and listening and sticking with us to the very end. We have reached the end of this episode of Android Faithful. This is the moment in the show when we dance. No, not quite yet. This is the moment where we talk about what we have going on. We'll start with you, Michelle. What you got?
So if you want to hear more about what's happening in Android 15, follow me on Twix, Mastodon, Threads, etc. at Michelle Rahman, and support me on Patreon at patreon.com/MichelleRahman. This is a great time to join our Discord community because we have a lot of cool stuff coming up with respect to Android 15. And speaking of which, I'm actually doing a presentation tomorrow about what to expect to Android 15. I'm doing a presentation at the AOSP and AAOS, or Android Automotive OS, March meetup. So if you want to hear more, you can go to this link that I'll send Jason right now. And you can hear me talk about what to expect in Android 15. I got this big presentation all ready to go. It's going to be happening tomorrow at, I think, it'll be 3 p.m. Eastern is when I'm going to be on.
The AOSP and the AAOS March meetup, found at meetup.com. Go there and search for that title and you can find it. The URL is very long. But yeah, it's on the meetup site. Excellent. Oh, cool. That's pretty sweet.
Love that meetup site, right?
Yeah.
Or meetup app, right? Friend of the show.
Right
behind there.
On. Yeah. All right, Wynn, what about you?
Let's see. I am an Android developer. I do and have talked about technical things related to Android development, and you can find all of my talks and related content and code on my website, randomlytyping.com. And, you know, if you want to follow me on the interwebs and on the social medias, your best shot, honestly, is Instagram at QueenCodeMonkey. But I hope I'm QueenCodeMonkey in most other places. And so that's me. But, yeah, mostly Instagram. I'm sorry, y'all. But yeah, follow the show. Buy a t-shirt.
My
t-shirt, please. I'm going to buy one. I'm going to buy all the merch, all the varieties. Anyway.
Thank you, man. What about you, Ron?
Yeah, just follow me at RonXO across Twitter, or not Twitter, all social media. I'm at RonXO in some way, shape, or form. And then I'm most active on Instagram these days. But reminder, go to androidfaithful.threadless.com and get an Android Faithful t-shirt. There you go. You can make it your own. Thanks to everybody who's already bought one during the live stream. We've seen the orders coming in. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's wonderful, you guys.
AndroidFaithful.threadless.com. More to come.
Very nice. Oh, and why not throw it in there as well? bit.ly/AFGoogleIO. We're giving you a lot of work today.
Sure. Yes.
And we appreciate the work that you do.
If you'd like to show your interest in attending a live Android Faithful recording and /party, go to bit.ly/AFGoogleIO, all lowercase, AFGoogleIO. There you go. So
there you go. All right. As for me, just go to yellowgoldstudios.com. I am putting up, that went full screen. I didn't mean for that. Putting up new content. I'm finishing up my review of the OnePlus Watch 2. The reality is I've got so much stuff to review that I'm like swimming in it right now. I have to catch up. It's going to take me a couple of months to get through this stuff, but I've got a review of the OnePlus Watch 2 coming at least. So yellowgoldstudios.com, you can find that. You can also find episodes of AI Inside with me and Jeff Jarvis, the podcast, the video version anyways, hits the channel. And thank you for your support there. But we have reached the end of this episode of Android Faithful. We do this podcast every Tuesday evening. You can, of course, subscribe by going to our website. We do have one, androidfaithful.com. You can find all the information you need to subscribe in the many different ways. We've got all of our episodes listed there. It's like a playground for Android Faithful fans. So go there, check that out. Also, if you want to support us on Patreon, you can. Once again, patreon.com/androidfaithful takes you there so you can support us directly. We appreciate it if you do that. And other than that, you know, really just look for Android Faithful in all the different places online, all the social media platforms. You'll probably find us in one way or another. And just let us know what you think of the show. Contact@androidfaithful.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a wonderful night.